You are now listening or watching Hello Kopi Kamilo Podcast Episode 44 with Eddie Lim, founder of the brand Mother Puaka.
Eddie Lim is the nicest,
easygoing, long sleeve, tatted guy I've ever met in my life. You know what I'm saying? Mother Puaka, mother. Listen to this podcast, man. There's always a pot of gold in each episode. That's all I can say. There's a lot of jam on this one, man. Listen. On your way to work, on your way back home from work, in the gym, listen to this jam. Whoa. Hello, Kopi Kamilo Podcast, episode 44.
Hey, this is Hello, Kopi Kamilo Podcast. Today we have Eddie Lim.
Hey, man.
Eddie Lim, the creative. For those listeners who don't know who you are, man, how would you describe yourself?
Dirtbag. just a dirtbag, man. Yeah.
How young are you, bro?
I will be 39 at the end of the year.
All right.
Yeah.
So, you've been in the creative industry sort of like for most of your working lifetime.
Yeah, for about 19 years, I would say.
19 years. Yeah, Holy shit.
Yeah, so I'm 39 this year. I started working in a small advertising agency when I was 20.
Damn.
Yeah.
That was your first job.
That was my first job.
How were you like as a kid, dude? How were you like as like growing up?
As a kid?
Yeah.
Well, my mom says I was a good kid up until I became a teenager, then I became a demon. But I had a really great childhood, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a really great childhood. I grew up in Klang.
Okay.
And Klang's a really rough city. But I was very lucky, I suppose. I had a good mix I was quite a popular kid at school, so I hung out with everybody, you know, like those who were the bad eggs and those who were the good guys as well, you know. I always had both sides that I could kind of attend to.
Have you always been like the rebel in school?
I was mischievous. Yeah, I wouldn't say I was a good kid, lah. Yeah, that's a bit that would be an outright lie, man. but I wasn't particularly rebellious or anything like that. No. Mm.
Yeah. Well, what do you remember the first moment that you sort of had a tattoo, put on a tattoo?
Yeah,
yeah.
1998.
Shit.
Yeah.
So what was the first tattoo, bro?
This one, man. This sun.
Damn.
It's just the sun.
Do you have to like renew it or?
No.
That is the original one.
That is the original one. The very first tattoo I ever made. My clang are being tattooed.
Damn.
You know, they say people with tattoos, you'll definitely have at least one that you regret. You know,
oh, right.
I mean? Yeah. So.
So the first one was the one that you regret.
I don't regret it. It's my first one, but I know, and I mean, now looking back, I know I could have done a nicer one, like, because at the time I was just so young, you know, and at the time tattooing was still quite new in Malaysia.
Yeah.
Not like in Singapore. Singapore tattooing has been around for like, I think, easily 20 years before Malaysia. You know, so it was already very established there. But when tattooing came to Malaysia, it was really hard to find a shop. And then, I mean, as a teenager, you know, we weren't really sure what the process was like. You know, I didn't even realize that you could like get the artist to custom design. Just like some flash in a book. So I just like I saw that. I thought like, okay, this is quite nice, and I picked that. I didn't realize you could actually ask the artist to custom something
right
for you. You know,
yeah.
So that whole process was quite. New lah for me at the time, yeah.
So, where do you study, bro? For like, I mean, after high school, or do you just straight up hustle, find your first job?
No, so after sekolah menengah, I went to Sunway.
Sunway.
Yeah, I was in Sunway College.
So Sunway already existed back in 98.
Yeah, yeah, but at that time it was just Sunway College. It wasn't College University Sunway, you know. And it's been around before, like Moots went to Sunway as well, man.
Shit.
Yeah,
okay.
Moots went to Sunway, I think, in 96.
Wow.
I went in 98. Yeah. So after college, I came out with this marketing thing, right? And then I was trying to see whether I could find a job as a marketeer. And I had a friend, old friend of mine from Klang, and he was working in an advertising agency as a copywriter. So I asked him like, "Hey, what's that?" You know, and then he told me what it was about, and I had kind of learned a little bit about advertising, but I had never met anyone who was actually in it. So he told me about what he did, and I thought it sounded quite interesting. And he knew I liked to write. My job was just to proofread.
Oh,
you know, all right, I had to do was just proofread, make sure there are no spelling mistakes, no grammar mistakes. There used to be a program back then that we used called Quark Express, which was a program to kind of put stuff in the layout, kind of like InDesign right now, but this is like quite rudimentary la, at the time. And I think one of the coolest things that came from that job was me being able to see stuff done in analog, you know, because even though it was the year 2000, that's like right at the cusp when things were switching from analog to digital, you know. So I caught the tail end of it, but I still got to see it, you know. I still got to be involved in that, right? And that was really cool because I'm born in 1980, and I don't know whether you know, there's a, so you're a millennial, right?
Yeah.
Right? So and then there's the Gen X, baby boomers and all that that came before, right? I'm part of this generation of people called the Zennials. I don't know whether you ever heard that.
Oh, I never heard of that.
So I might be wrong on the numbers, but if I'm not mistaken, those born, it's a very small window, those born between 1977 to 1983.
Oh, okay.
It's just a very small window. Right. These people are called the Zennials. So I'm part of that. And Zennials are very fortunate because, again, we saw the change. We actually saw the change. We were at that age where the change happened. You know, we weren't too young, we weren't too old. So I got to see all that, got to do that. Got my hands dirty. So I was very lucky. I don't know of many people who got to do that, you know, except those who were very senior la, from me, you know, who were really hands-on. Video editing was film with scissors.
Shit.
Can you imagine, like, back then I used
you were doing it and you were part of that.
I couldn't do it. I didn't know how to work the machine.
But I witnessed that.
Because with the ads that I got to do, eventually I got to go to these like production houses and all that. Yeah, and the editing machines. And I would see these guys, they would actually edit, like physically cutting the film, you know, and stuff was recorded on film. So that was cool. That was a great experience for me, actually, to get to see all of that. And of course, eventually everything moved to digital, and then everything is so easy.
So what was your greatest strength in terms of creativity? Because I remember you mentioned to me that music was also a big part of your life,
right?
Yeah,
music was a big part of my life.
So you have you always been like the front man, the voice of a band, or you have always envisioned yourself, or maybe who were you influenced by back in the day?
Wow, like? Okay. It's funny you should ask, man, because just a couple of nights ago, I caught up with one of my old bandmates in the very first band that I was in. It's not the first band I was in. It was the first proper band, I would say. Because in school, we would form bands and we would go for jamming and stuff like that, but it was never really serious, you know? But I joined a band and we were gigging and doing all that stuff. So my old bandmate, He used to be a journalist with the Star, and now he's actually teaching at the college. So I met up with him just a couple of nights ago, together with my other bandmate in one of the last bands I had, like the band that was probably the most active.
This is all after high school, right?
It's all after high school. So the first band I was in was a band called Mojo Pin, right? And I was a drummer. I never saw myself as a frontman.
Okay.
You know, that wasn't what I wanted to do, you know. I enjoy playing drums. So I started off as a drummer, self-taught.
How do you actually self-teach yourself back in the day? Yeah, how do you...
I knew someone who could play drums. And asked him to show me how to do it. And he kind of explained it to me. And then after that, it's just shit tons of practice, man. It's just a lot of practice. That's all there is to it, you know.
You need an actual drum set to actually make it work.
No, man.
Oh, no?
No. Right. That's the beauty about drums. Because it's not like guitar or other instruments. Because drums, you're playing a beat, right? So as long as you get your coordination down, you're fine. So I used to practice even without a drum set. You know, just using my hands and feet, just like tapping or kicking stuff or like hitting on biscuit tins and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but so I picked up drums. I was 14 when I picked up drums. And I just played around and jammed a lot. And then I joined Mojo Pin. I think I was about 20 at the time, you know, the same time I started my first job, right? And so that was great. I had a lot of fun playing drums. I was telling them about how much of a struggle it was for me to become a frontman, you know.
So the transition, I guess.
It sucked, man. I didn't like it. I wasn't. It wasn't for me. I'm not a frontman, you know. I didn't like that. Of course, if you ask them, they will tell you differently. But just for me personally, it's not how I feel.
Is it a conflict of character? Like, you feel like you're more introverted, or in what sense?
I don't like being in the spotlight, you know.
Right.
Which is strange. I know, like, being covered in tattoos and stuff like that. I know it's very strange to hear. But I'm not the kind of guy who likes to be in the spotlight. I told the guys, I feel so naked. I don't feel like I'm a musician anymore, because going from drums, where I'm playing this big kit and I'm sitting at the back, to being in front and I'm holding the mic and singing, it felt really weird.
Yeah.
So I didn't like that. So I wanted to pick up an instrument, and I wasn't good at guitar. So I decided to pick up harmonica.
Mm.
And that's my main instrument until today. Ever heard of the Rainforest World Music Festival?
Yeah.
In Kuching?
Uh-huh.
So I used to go every year.
You go there because of your interest.
Because of my interest, right? I used to go to Rainforest Festival every year, mm-hmm. from 2003 till about 2010. I wouldn't miss it. That was like a big thing, you know? Like, my housemates and I, we would go every year. That was our big mid-year trip, lah, right? And I learned so much from that those festivals, man. If you've never been, right? You ever get the chance, you should go. You know, it's you learn so much. And the rest of the guys, it was a 13-member band. You know, 13-member band, and we got to play in a lot of cool places, man. I think we got to play in Korea. We did a 6-week tour in the States.
Mm.
That was really cool. That was probably one of the best opportunities I've had. You know, like, best experiences for me to tour the US with my band. You know, with my world music band. We had a tour bus, living in hotels and stuff. That was great.
So it's like a little bit of a hint of a rock star's life, lah. In a way,
I suppose you could say that, but it's not. I would hardly consider as rock stars, because we were playing traditional music. It wasn't like a sex, drugs, rock and roll thing. That was my dream when I was with Sixers. I was like, oh man, I'd love to go and fucking sex, drugs, and rock and roll this shit in the States, you know. But I went with my world music band, and we were there. We were playing like DK Barat, Joget, right? I sang Rasa Sayang like 20,000 times, man.
Shit. You
know? And but it was really great.
Cool.
And then going from being a spectator at Rainforest Festival, we headlined Rainforest Festival
Damn.
In 2012, you know? So that was an amazing experience. I would still be with the band today, but Raf passed away a few years ago. You know, he's younger than me, man. Like, it was really sad. Like, it broke my heart. And and after he was gone, the band didn't feel the same, you know?
Mm.
We had to play a gig 2 days after his funeral, you know. And that was really tough, man. It was really tough. The band's getting back together. I'm happy to say Diplomats are getting back together and they're performing.
With Ultimate in it?
Ultimate's not in it.
Okay.
Because Ultimate's not performing anymore.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And me neither, because I just don't have the time. You know, I can't commit.
Right.
And I don't want to be in a band that I can't commit. It's just not fair to the rest of the band.
Yeah.
Right. I guess we will always be part of the band. It's just that in the coming performance that they have planned, I won't be in it.
Mm.
And neither is Ultimate. I don't know whether Ultimate will be in the next ones, if there are any. I'll try. I mean, if my schedule permits, then I would like to do that. But yeah, but I think this music is kind of taken.
Sort of behind the scenes, the person who behind the, like, sort of the brain of every sort of like a creative movement with your company now, or perhaps with Media Prima, right? If you look at videos like a famous, a successful story, right? What would be the secret sauce, you think, behind an artist? You know, like let's say a viral video, is that sufficient, or does a character need charisma, need to be backed up by labels, need to have planning, do this and then do the next step and then the next step and so on? Or is it like natural talent, you need to be able to be a performer since you were 5 and then you can make it?
Is there a message that you're trying to get across?
Yeah.
Or what? Are you doing this for your own love, passion, you know? Are you willing to sell out or not? How much are you willing to sell out? You know, there's a lot of too many variables are in a situation, you know. But I would say, above all else, more important than talent, right? The most important thing is hard work, lah. Right? The person who works the hardest is the one that will make it.
Mm.
You know. Maybe if you have talent, you don't have to work so hard in in certain aspects, but you should still work hard.
For example, you see someone who's like up and coming rapper, right? How can you tell, like, okay, this guy has potential based on their followings or based on their rapping skills or their whole look, the whole package? Because I feel like you can sense and you sort of have been doing the whole behind the scene and the thinking process behind signing someone, for example.
I think that kind of comes with... No, like, I'm not the best person when it comes to A&R, you know? There are people I want to sign that their moods doesn't agree with.
Right.
There are quite a few, actually, that I want to sign that moods doesn't agree with. But it's all on different reasons, lah. Like, I want to sign a band because I think they're fucking amazing, you know? And Moots agrees that this band is fucking amazing, but as from a business point of view, it doesn't make sense, you know? So we don't sign. You know what I mean? So that's give and take. Like, everyone will look at it from different points, you know? I'm not the best A&R person, but I know how I feel about certain things, you know, when I watch a band or if I watch an act or whether it's a rapper or actor or whoever, and how the person makes me feel, right?
Yeah.
And that also comes with, again, like about 2 decades being in the industry, you know? But there is definitely an X factor thing that some people have that most people don't, you know? And an X factor could be anything, man. It could be a look, it could be your attitude, it could be your character. It's that one thing you can't quite put your finger on, you know? But fucking jadi, you know?
Yeah.
I'm very lucky. I've met people throughout my life that have that X factor, like really, like something so special about this person, you know?
Yeah.
It's and they're all different. Like, this person's X factor is different from that person's X factor. You know what I mean?
I see.
Yeah, it's not like a look. Or it's not like a voice or something.
Okay,
it's all different. It's whatever works for that person.
Right.
Or
so
whatever works for that band.
So like artists, like musicians, and like Ultimate, you've worked closely with Joe Fizzo and Nosale, right?
These are all guys with the X factor, man.
Yeah, these are the guys that you see they have something different, right?
Yeah.
What would be the thing that separates them from, or maybe the common thing that they have that other people don't have, you think?
They all work hard, bro.
Yeah.
All of them, they work so hard, man. No, Ultimate, Joe, who else? I mean, like Aman Ra. Like, all these guys, like, they work so hard. They work harder than most people I know.
Yeah, for sure.
That's one thing about them. They have the talent, they have the X factor, but the reason why they're so successful because they work so damn hard, you know?
Yeah. What do you think the quality trait that is common apart from hard work to begin with? Let's say they, like, is it because, like, they are brave enough to try it out? Or because sometimes hard work.
Yeah, I think they believe in themselves.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I think I'm sure they all believe in themselves and believe in what they're doing. They don't care what people say about what they were doing. Yeah. You know?
I think the biggest reason that I want to have you on the podcast is because I find that you have the same quality. Even that you don't realize it, or maybe perhaps it's clouded by other things. You're too busy being in a game that you forgot that we, the new generations, are looking up to you guys to seek inspiration. Thanks, because you guys have been through it and you guys know the recipe, right? We are just getting started.
We don't know the recipe, man. We're still figuring it out. We're all still figuring it out.
Yeah. Where do you find inspiration when things run dry? Apart from going...
Life, man.
Yeah?
Like, it's like things that are around you, you know? I mean, like, the world is such a... beautiful, enormous, varied place, you know? Like, there's so many things you can find inspiration from. I think if you're going out to find inspiration, you will find it, like, in anywhere, in anything that you, whatever that you can kind of, it's so hard to explain. Like, I get inspired by everything that's around me, you know? People, cars, animals are very inspiring. Like, for me, like, animals, man. I like animals more than I like most people. I think you should never lose your sense of wonder, you know? Like, this wall behind here, you know, we put this up ourselves, you know? Wheat paste. Have you ever done wheat paste?
No, I haven't.
So you know what Wheatpaste is?
I don't.
So
what, probably the thing that I'm looking at right now.
Yeah. So you know Shepard Fairey is?
No, I don't.
Shepard Fairey is the guy who started Obey.
Oh yeah, okay. That
he's a street artist, right?
Right.
It started as a street artist anyway, right? So they would make paper posters like this, right? Paper. And they will make this thing called wheat paste. And wheat paste is basically starch, right? Like corn starch or something that you mix up into a bucket. And you just like slap this on a wall and give it one brush and chow, bro. Mm-hmm. You know? Because it was fast and it sticks like forever, man.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's really hard to kind of like peel off, you know?
So this is what you see like on the street?
You still see it around.
Oh, okay.
You still see it around, right? Fami Reza still does it. You know, quite a lot of the street artists still do it. But stuff like that, you know what I mean? Like that kind of human ingenuity, you know?
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To use cornstarch as an adhesive.
Mm.
I mean, that's it's fucking brilliant. You know what I mean? So stuff like that inspires me, you know? Yeah, that's just one example, you know? But even I would look at a sign or, you know, like in Malaysia especially, we've got so many signboards that are just like spelling a mistake in there or some, you know what I mean? Like I'll look at these things and I will laugh.
And then you being a proofreader in the past, you won't see past mistakes, right? You see everything.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll spot these mistakes and I'll have a good laugh. But then, you know, I can kind of like use that and turn it to a joke. Or turn it to something else, or play with some words, you know. Or I'll meet a guy and he's got a really strange name, and I'll be like, okay, wow, you know. And I can turn that into a joke, and put, you know what I mean? Like, so many things, man. Mm-hmm. So many things. I look around the world and I see the world such a beautiful place.
The days are where things run dry, though, like you don't feel like going to work, for example, like you yourself, no matter how things are going on, you got everything for you. But some days, you know, I know you must have had more experience than me because you've lived a longer life. But I feel like those days where it's so dark and it's a little bit like demotivated, you know, you don't feel like doing anything, you know, is it the same angle, you know?
Days like that doesn't mean that there's a problem with work. You know, for me, days like that means there's a personal problem I need to work on or overcome, you see. So if you don't take care of yourself, you can't produce good work, lah.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I'm very thankful that in my job, I get to create stuff. You know what I mean? To do cool shit and to make things happen. That's like probably one of the coolest jobs that could ever have, right?
Yeah.
So what's that a complaint, really? You know, that's I mean, who else is gonna pay you money to come and make cool stuff happen? You know.
Yeah.
All the pressure and expectations that come with that is all part of the job. You know, you have to take it together. Like this is what, you know, this is why you're getting paid, to do, you know. But the days I wake up and I feel like, oh man, I really don't feel like going to work today or something, right? It's like, it's probably I'm like super fucking hungover, you know, or there's a personal issue that needs to be sorted. But it's very, very, very rarely work related, you know, because again, we've been given this opportunity to be able to create cool stuff. What is there to complain about, you know?
Yeah,
you get what I'm saying? So if I don't feel like going to work because like something had happened, or you know what I mean, that I need to take care of that. But other than that, usually I'm like quite happy to wake up and get going, you know.
What do you look for when you hire someone? Because I've witnessed you interviewing like a bunch of people, but I'm just curious, like what goes on in your head? A
whole bunch of stuff, actually. Of course, I would like to meet a person face to face, right? That's very important for me.
Yeah,
because I can read your credentials,
like the resumes and all that. Yeah,
I can read through all of that, but usually I wouldn't even look. You know, to be honest, I wouldn't even look. Like so we get all these applications and people send in their resumes and all that, and then Sanjit will have a stack and he'll like, okay, you need to go through these. I'll like just call them in for an interview, you know. So I'll just have a glance through, but I don't usually bother so much with reading all of that, you know.
Why so though? Like,
because that's not a judge of character, and it's not a judge of ability. You can tell me what you've done or what you're good at. Anybody can say that. And then of course everybody on the resume, they're gonna put all the you're gonna put all your best stuff,
the good
in there,
side,
right?
Right?
And that's cool. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. That's a reason why it's still used until today, you know? But that's only 50% of it, right? The other 50% is how are you like as a person, you know? And I want to ask, like, the people I interview, I'll ask stuff like, okay, what's the, do you listen to music? What's your favorite song? You know what I mean? I stuff like that is very important for me. Because if you don't love music, then you really shouldn't be working in entertainment. You know? Because even though the job may not necessarily be music related, music is a very big part of it.
Yeah.
Everything needs to be cut to a soundtrack, you know? And your sense of rhythm, beat, melody, mood, all of these things come into play, right? So if you can't tell me your favorite song, or if you're not a fan of music, to me that's a big
no-no.
Really,
so you have to be a music fan.
You have to be
fan.
A music. For me, lah. For me, like if I hire somebody, and it doesn't matter what music, you can tell me it's Kroncong for all I care, and I'll be like, wow, that's cool, you know? But if you can't appreciate music, then that's a problem, lah. So that's a big no-no for me.
Right.
Yeah, because you can learn. Because music goes hand in hand with fashion and art, you know, with album covers, and I mean that's creativity at its finest. It's not just the song itself, but the entire
package.
Packaging, you know.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So apart from that, apart from music though,
apart from that, I would like to see how well a person is in, and I don't mean extrovert. I mean how well a person kind of carries himself or speaks, or you know, that's his personality, and his character, her character, you know. Because from that we can kind of gauge whether he or she will work well in a team. You know, I don't want to hire someone who can't work in a team,
right?
Or someone who's very arrogant. You know.
Yeah.
If you're arrogant because you're damn good, probably I probably still wouldn't hire you. You know.
Yeah.
Because it's not about how good you are, you know, it's how good the team can be, right? You know, and people who are very arrogant because of their ability usually don't work very well in teams.
Yeah.
And to me, that's, you're probably better off starting off your own company. You know what I mean? Nothing wrong with the person. It's just I don't think this person would be a good fit for the team. But if this person went on to start his own company and or a freelance thing, then I would like to work with this person, you know what I mean? It's just because it's a bigger picture, right?
Yeah.
You know, so when I hire a person, it's not just relationship between me and the person. I've got to see how that person would kind of fit with the current dynamic of the team, and the team is changing as well, right? And when I say the team, I mean top to bottom, no? All the way up from our chairman down to the cleaner lady, you know what I mean? If you can't say good morning to the cleaner lady, you're a fucking asshole, you know what I mean? And I don't want people like that, right? Willingness to learn, I think that's very, very, very important, because for me that's the one thing about me I felt that really got me this far, you know, that I was always willing to learn everything, you know. I never felt like anything was ever beneath me.
Yeah.
Right. And I did it all, man. And I tell you, from like angkat kerusi, angkat kota to whatever, to I did it all, you know. Like there was never a hierarchy lah for me in that sense, you know. I mean, my bosses tell me I should start behaving more like a boss, and I'm like, I suppose I could, but I don't like to.
Yeah,
you know, so I'll still be the guy who's gonna climb up there and tape the, you know what I mean, tape the stuff and all that. I still do it, you know, but I get that I should let more things go so that the guys have an opportunity to learn and experience that also. Like, I can't be doing that all the time. That's what Moots tells me, you know, all the time. I can't always be the one that's doing everything. Otherwise, what's my team gonna learn, you know? Uh-huh. So I'm like, all right, fine, you know? Yeah. But that's me, like, I'm very hands-on. When I do something, I like to be very hands-on. That's why at the last Anamblas Baris concert, so I was running around, I was doing as much as I could, you know, because I felt like this is my baby and I gotta jaga lah, you know? Yeah. Yeah, willingness to learn for sure. Someone who can admit their mistakes. I like someone who can argue with me about stuff. You know, I like a person who can tell me that I'm wrong.
Right.
You know, I think that's very important. Also, unfortunately, there are not a lot of people like that. I don't know whether it's because I look scary.
Right.
But I have met a few who are like that, who will question me, and I love it, man. I really do.
Yeah.
I really do. They will question everything because I question everything.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. If you could go back in time and talk to your 23-year-old self and give one little tips or advice to him, right, what would you say to yourself?
Oh man, don't do drugs, bro.
See, that would be all, man.
Well, I mean, that would probably be one of the things. Or don't do so much drugs. I would probably, if I could go back in time and tell my 23-year-old self anything, I would tell my 23-year-old self to kind of take it easy. I think take it easy, and I don't mean take it easy as like relax or anything like that. You know, like don't be so, okay. Put it this way, I'll explain it better if I can explain what it was like. Like I was always, I always thought I wasn't gonna live long. You know, maybe today I'm a little bit more comfortable that if I go, I go, right. But back then, I always felt like I needed to kind of really prove myself because I wasn't sure how long I was going to live, right? So yeah, so I would tell my 23-year-old self, yeah, I mean, you could still work as hard as I did, still do everything that I did, but don't feel like, you know, don't feel like that. Like, I was quite dark, you know, because I had a lot of friends who passed away young, and because of that, I always felt like, whoa, this is a It's something that could happen, you know. So because of that, I always felt like I need to rush things. I need to do things, you know. And I used to get very frustrated also when certain things didn't work out, you know. I actually started my own advertising agency when I was about 20, you know. I joined this company where I was a junior copywriter, and then I left. And then I started my own agency, and I ran that for a while, and then I sold my shares. The agency still exists today. I'm just not a part of it anymore. But it's something that I had started. And after I left that company, I joined Grey, you know. So that was like kind of like my first taste in starting my own thing, lah. You know what I mean? So I might probably do that a little bit differently, you know. I probably might do that a little bit differently, not get so frustrated with things,
right? So take it easy and just trust the process.
Take it easy in the sense that you're not gonna die tomorrow, lah.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
That's what we 20 something always feel, right?
Yeah,
somehow
do you
yeah, yeah, yeah. We feel that like time is running out. If we don't do this today, we might not even be able to do it.
That's not a bad thing to have, though.
Yeah?
It's not a bad thing to have, you know. It got me this far, right? Yeah, it's not a bad thing to have.
Okay, who do you look forward to collaborating in the nearest future, man?
Wow, okay. So I've got a few collaborations coming up with Mother Poker. So I'm quite excited about those. Loser Machine is this brand from the States that we carry here in the shop. The owner of that brand is this guy Adrian Lopez, who was a pro skater, right, from back in the day, who's also into bikes. So he started Loser Machine. So we have some stuff with Loser Machine that we're working on. So I'm quite excited about that. There's a helmet brand from Japan called Beetle. So we've got a collaboration with that coming up, launching in July, I think. And then who else? Well, of course, it's Hikari Riders thing with that we're doing,
okay,
you know, on the 1st of March. Who I would like to collaborate with, man, there's this guy called Eric Brunetti. Yeah, he's someone I would really love to work with.
Is he in the same scene?
He is. Do you ever hear of this streetwear brand called Fucked?
No.
F-U-C-T.
Oh yeah.
He started Fucked like back in the mid 90s.
Right.
And yeah, he's someone I would really love to to work with. Eric Brunetti from Fucked. Yeah, he's like what a it's such a. I've never met him. I would love to meet him, but from what I read about and from what I see, he's a really special guy. You know, he started the logo parody thing. He was one of the first guy, probably the first guy I know that you know, he parodied the Ford logo and put Fucked instead.
What would you tell someone who hasn't found their passion and purpose in life? Like, what would you say? Like, if you could make a difference in this world, like someone's listening to this and listen to your part and you give the right piece of advice, right? They don't know their passion, they're scatterbrained, they're trying everything, but they just can't seem to find that one thing. What should they do, you know?
I think very few people actually find their purpose in life. You know, I don't think I found my purpose in life. You know, I don't know what my purpose. That's the big question. What, you know, that what is the purpose of life? Right. That's one of the things that people until today still can't answer. Ma, right. I think life is what you make out of it. You know. So I don't know what my purpose in life is, but I know the kind of life that I want. And I don't mean like live in a big house, right? Because not that kind of life, you know. Like I understand that my life is what I make out of it. You know, this is my life. This is my story. My life is the consequences of my choices, right?
Mm.
So, and I'm the only one that's living this life, right? So I don't know what my purpose in life is, but I know that this is my journey and this is the life that I'm carving for myself, right? As for passion, I don't think everybody kind of finds their passion too.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Which is, again, that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. But but I know it's quite, for me as someone who's very passionate about stuff, it can get quite boring, you know. I think a person who hasn't found his passion yet, maybe he's just not trying enough things, right? Or if not trying enough things, maybe they're too scared to try certain things. I would say just go ahead and do it. And I don't mean like quit your job right now and become a, you know what I mean? I don't mean it like that. Just pick it up, you know, just pick it up. Like for me, when I was a kid, like young, like oh man, like I've been not even 10 years old, you know, when I was like a kid, I really liked blues music.
Mm.
And the sound of the harmonica.
Wow.
But I didn't even know.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so the relativity, it will catch us on.
Yeah, because I didn't even realize, I didn't know that this was called blues music at the time, you know. There's a song called Bad to the Bone.
Okay.
By George Thorogood, right? This is this blues rock performer. It's called George Thorogood. His band is called The Destroyers. And they've got this big hit song called Bad to the Bone, you know. And when I first heard that song, it made me feel, I was a kid, it made me feel like, wow, you know, like I can't explain it, you know, something about that sound. So I discovered my passion and I didn't even know until I learned about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like if you say someone hasn't found their passion yet, maybe they are, they just haven't discovered it or haven't realized it. Like if you, but I guess you got to look at what things make you feel a certain way, you know. So example, does looking at shoes make you feel like wow, like something? Then maybe shoes are your passion, right? Maybe, you know. Yeah. I don't know, you know, but if you like looking at shoes, then maybe the shoes are your passion. Then maybe you could start with buying a couple of shoes and see how that makes you feel. You could become a collector or a trader or something, you know what I mean? Do you like looking at buildings? If does looking at buildings make you feel a certain way? And if so, maybe you could like interior design or you could like architecture and maybe that's your passion. You could be an accountant, but maybe that's, you like decorating your house. Maybe you could try, and you know what I mean? Like there are lots of things that you don't have to, you don't have to work in your passion. Not everybody has the opportunity to do that. But, you know, I'm sure it's something ridiculous, like less than 1% of the world gets to
crazy.
Think about it. You know,
yeah.
Less than 1% of the world gets to make a living doing what they like.
That's crazy.
Right?
That's a crazy number.
You think the Petani woke up thinking, I want to be a Petani, you know?
Yeah.
How many people in this world today actually get to make a living doing what they really like? I'm sure it's not many, you know, actually. Yeah. You know, I mean, it will be in the millions, of course, but you know, we've got a population of like what,
billions,
of billions already, you know. Yeah. more than 7 billion now, right? So what is that actually, right? It's not even 1%, no, you know.
Yeah. So I guess like if you find something that interests you, go all out, just don't look back and just dive deep. And because if not, you never be that 1%.
Yeah.
Right?
If you find something that interests you, I'm not saying quit your job and go and do that full time. If you are really interested in it and that's really what you want, then yeah, go for it. But you could still keep your job and keep working, but just dabble as a start and see how that makes you feel. And maybe do it a little bit more. And then dabble a little bit more. and try a little bit more and keep going until you find it, you know? You know what I mean?
Like,
yeah. I always knew I would get covered in tattoos since I was like 6 years old, man.
Damn.
You know? Yeah. I always knew. I always wanted that. Even as a kid. I don't know why. I can't explain it. Like back in the day, we used to have this bubble gum that you could buy with the stupid sticker.
Yeah, the right? Temporary tattoo, right?
Oh, man. I used to stick that shit all over myself, bro. When I was a kid. Yeah. You know? And until today, I'm like this.
Right. How does it feel like to be Eddie Lim, though? Has anyone ever asked you that? Like,
no, man. No one's ever asked me that.
How does it feel like to honestly, apart from this job, apart from all this busy, apart from your reputation, man? How
my
does
reputation,
it,
huh?
Yeah, apart, yeah, all of those leave aside. Like, how does it feel like to be you, man?
Wow. I'm in a good place. I'm very happy. I'm very thankful. I know I say that a lot, but I am very thankful because I know, despite circumstance and all that, the opportunities I've been given are crazy, man. I don't know how I ever. I always tell my girl, like, I'm like the luckiest guy, you know. I'm like the luckiest guy ever. I don't know how or why, like, people take a liking to me, you know, or people listen to me when I speak. I can't explain it. I don't know why, you know. I don't know why it is that people listen to me when I speak, or people take a liking to me enough to let me do certain things my way. The opportunities I've been given and all that is crazy. I don't know. I mean, like, I'm just a dirtbag from Klang, you know. Like I said, right? I never thought I'd be doing the things I'm doing, you know. So yeah. So what it's like to be Eddie Lim? It's great, man. I'm so lucky, so blessed. But also, I've never backed down from a fight, you know.
Mm.
Like if someone says I cannot do something, I like pantang, bro. I pantang dicaba.
Wow.
You know? Yeah. If someone ever tells me no, this one cannot be done, I'll be like, you know what?
Okay.
Fuck you. I'm gonna do it. You know? that's me, lah. That's my problem, actually. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Do you think like anxiety and depression, they are real or they're just man-made?
It's real, man. It's definitely real.
How does someone overcome it, man? Is it like something that you get over, or you just have to pray that you get away from it? Or
no, I think not at all. I believe anxiety and depression are very real things. My best friend is a psychiatrist.
Mm.
It's my closest buddy in the whole world. And he's a psychiatrist, and it's something that we talk about. So I would say that if a person has anxiety, or if a person is going through depression, you should probably go and see someone about it. It's not something that you should just try and get over. I think that's not the right way to handle it. Being in Asia, nobody talks about mental health, you see.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah. So being in Asia, nobody talks about mental health. People are just expected to get over this shit. But it's a sickness, You know? It's a sickness. There's help. You can go and see someone for help or for medication, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about, you know. It's just not well, you know. You're just not well, and I don't mean crazy, you know. That's another thing that I feel like a lot of people misuse. You know, you go and see a psychiatrist means you're
crazy,
something crazy, something wrong with you. It's not true, man. It's not true. It could be any. It could be something as simple as a chemical imbalance, and you just need to take something.
Mm.
You know, supplements or hormones or whatever. I'm not the expert, you know. It could just be something as simple as a chemical imbalance. Because there's so many variables why people go through or happen, you know. Did you witness something? Did you have something happen to you or what, you know? Then there's counselling, there's therapy, there are all these things. But you should definitely get help, You know. You should definitely get help. I'm a believer in mental health because... again, I've got someone who I'm very close to who's in that, you know.
Mm.
And he tells me some crazy shit, man. You know, he tells me some.
Do you think, like, if it's not cured, that it will somehow lead to suicide?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think... I don't think so. It's not always like that. But if it's not suicide, there are other things. Self-harm,
Mm.
You know. suicide is like the end all already, ma. You know, you take your own life, in the, so there's nothing left, right?
It's the edge, right?
That's it, yeah. Okay. So you've gone over that edge. But there's still a lot of stuff that could happen to you, which is really bad. Sometimes even maybe worse than death, I would say. Self-harm, you know? People who cut themselves, people who... See, people who do a lot of drugs and all that, they are those who do drugs because they're self-medicating, because they're trying to escape something, right? You know, so yes, it's recreational use, but you're taking that because you want to try and stop feeling a certain way. You want to feel this way instead, you know. And if you do the wrong kind of drugs, that's worse than death, man. That's bad, bro. If you ever do stuff like heroin, you know, or meth, this kind of this really bad stuff. You heard about crocodile, that drug that in Russia? There's a problem in Russia right now, for a while now actually. Vice covered it. There's a drug, a cheap drug called crocodile that's going around that makes your skin fall off, bro.
Shit.
It rots your flesh.
Damn.
Why? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You start doing stuff like that, it might as well. I think death was probably the better option.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So self-harm. And the problem with self-harm is that it can be prolonged, you know, for a very, very long time, whereas suicide is just dead, right? Yeah.
So why do you think suicide happened, though? Like, if
why do I think?
Why do you think people choose to end their life over?
I think perhaps they feel like that is their only way out, lah.
Yeah.
I think for a person to be driven to the point where they want to take their own life, I think they probably feel like that's the only way out for them, and it's usually not the case. There are always options, you know. Mm. There are always options, but. It really depends on your situation, you know. Like, if a person has an incurable disease, right, and he's going to die a very slow and painful death, it makes sense for him to, right?
Yeah,
legal in Canada, right?
Oh, is it?
Assisted suicide.
Shit, okay.
Assisted suicide is legal in Canada. You can actually call someone to come to your house and they will...
Damn.
They will help you kill yourself, bro. Painless.
Wow.
You know, assisted suicide is legal in Canada.
Damn.
But it's usually for people who...
Who has something going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Cool.
You know, so I don't think there's anything wrong about wanting to take your own life. Actually, you know, it's your life. You can do whatever you want with it. But the reason is what's very important, you know. I think if a person feels like there's no other option than this, that they have to take their own life, I would say, have you really explored all the options or not? You know, because it's sad, lah. It's sad, you know. It's really sad. It's not something that, it's not something I would like to see those close to me go through. But at the same time, yeah, I know life can be tough, right? But that's life, isn't it?
You know? I think, does it associate with the art of quitting, though? Like, with life, like, if you quit a lot of times, then there's no... It's like you get addicted to quitting, in a way?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah?
Maybe. That's an interesting way to put it. Yeah, art of quitting, huh? Like, I know some people sabotage themselves, huh?
Wow.
You know? Like, they can't see things through to the end, so they kind of sabotage themselves and then quit. Or, you know what I mean?
Oh.
So that thing doesn't finish.
Oh,
so,
shit.
So maybe, maybe...
Okay.
But again, I'm not the expert, you know. I would say if anybody is feeling suicidal, please talk to someone about it, you know, and really find out what's the root cause of the problem. Because sometimes you may think that A is the problem when it's actually Y, or, you know, or something else that's much further down, it's much more deep-rooted than that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. If you could have any cup of coffee with any musicians, who would it be?
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
What would you say to him?
What would I say to him? I would say I would just like to hang out with the guy and just like try and talk to him, man. I probably want to ask him. I would ask him so many things, though. I would ask him what it's like. I would ask him what it's like, you know. Because he was someone who was blessed with so much talent, right? You know, what is it like, you know, to be that talented? No, like, you don't. I don't know whether you understand how Jimi Hendrix changed the world, you know, and the sound of the guitar and everything. You know, he's got so much talent in him, like godlike almost. What is it like to have that much talent? You know, that's crazy.
Cool.
Michael Jackson is someone I'd love to have coffee with.
Yeah.
Same, probably the same question too. What's it like to be to have so much talent, you know. It's oozing out of your ears. Prince, Prince is another guy, man, like, wow, what a legend, you know. The drummer of Led Zeppelin, this guy John Bonham, he's someone who is a very interesting character, I think.
Okay, this is where I flip the script, man. Like, let you ask me any question that you have, anything at all, but hopefully it's not about a podcast, because I've been asked many, many times.
About the podcast?
Apart from the podcast.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so you are my brother's age, right? 92.
Yeah.
Means you're 26 this year.
Yeah, 26.
Right, 26 this year. I suppose I never really understood what it's like growing up a millennial, you know? Like, being born in the digital age. Mm. It's something that's very alien to me, you know?
Yeah.
What is the earliest memory that you have of you using a digital device?
Earliest memory.
Mm. How young were you and what was it?
It was a handycam. The handycam. Because like 92, if you were born in 92, you sort of remember 90s pretty well.
Okay.
You know, so I think that was like 96 or something.
You're 4 years old.
97, right, yeah. Right. And because like my brothers are actually around your age.
Right.
Like, one is born in 1977 and the other one is 1975.
Right.
So they were the elders and they had all these things. Imagine like the same case, mm-hmm. like you and your brother, you had that drum set at home. Mm. So they had these same things.
Right.
So yeah, the earliest memory was that handycam. But but that is also so strange. If you compare a handycam back then to now, it's like crazy, you know?
Yeah.
We have footages, but we just don't know how to convert them.
Yeah.
You know, we still have those footages, yeah. Right? Yeah. So, yeah, those were the early... So
4 years old, using a handycam.
Yeah. I exposed to it, but I was mostly in front of the camera because I was like the kid. You know, when you're a kid, you want to say, you're cute, do this.
Right,
yeah,
right, yeah.
They were the experimental
having
one.
Having a kid is like having a pet. You know?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Look at it talk.
Yeah. So they were the ones who were playing with the camera. I'm mostly like doing what they told me to do. But I remember seeing the footage. Mm. So it's not being done well. They asked me to do again. Mm. You know, that kind of thing. So that actually, like, what you heard with the blues music, that helped me with acting, with being in front of the camera. Like, right now, even my job is doing a videography, is behind the camera. I feel so not natural, dude.
Yeah. You're more used to being in front of the camera?
I feel like I'm here to learn, to understand, like, how do I finally one day get myself in front there? Because I feel like all this, no offense to anyone who is the talent, most of them, like, they're like a puppet, dude. When I realized, like, if I could be the person in front of the camera, if I could be talent, damn, I would have a say to it.
See, I get you. Yeah. You're learning, you're trying to, you're seeing both sides of the matrix. La.
Yeah, learning the craft. La. Mm. Trying to learn from people and from yourself, actually, from like how to think, how you guys manage to do the same thing for a long period of time, the longevity of it, man.
Mm. Like what are you talking about?
Like you yourself, like you did the same thing in the sort of the broadcasting field, you know?
Right.
For a long time. And I'm sure you know a lot more than like a person who just got started, you know?
I do. It's because I'm of that age, lah, you know, been doing this a lot longer. It's nothing really particularly special about me, I think. It's just I've been doing this a lot longer, I suppose. Yeah. You know? But attitude, lah, attitude helps. Mm. Yeah, it counts.
Okay. You know? Okay, down to the last question before I end the podcast. How do you want the world to remember Eddie Lim and perhaps Mother Parker or the everything that you've created, like how do you want the whole world to remember you as?
That's exactly how I want the world to remember me, man.
Yeah.
I want the world to remember me as Eddie Lim, the guy who did these things, you know. I actually thought about it before, and I told some of my friends, like, if I die before, when I die, just tell my family I was a cool person, you know. Like just tell them from your points of views, you know, because my family knows me, but they know me as a son or as a brother, right, or a nephew or something like that. But a lot of my family doesn't know me the way my friends know me or my partners know me or you know, other people know me, right? So I would like my family to understand the kind of impact that I've had on other people. So I would like, yeah, my friends and the people who look at me and who look up to me, I suppose, you know. I would like them to just tell my family like what a cool guy I was, lah.
Yeah, I mean, you are definitely gentle on the inside, dude, because like your what you portray shows that don't mess with me, but you are actually a nice person, man.
That's the case for, I think, a lot of like heavily tattooed people, lah, bro.
Not all, man. Like some are like gangsters, they are really gangsters.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's different. Mine was more on the art side of things.
Yeah.
I've never lost that sense of wonder, lah. You know. Life is beautiful in its entirety, the good and the bad, right? Yeah, so I don't usually I'm not usually a negative person, that's why, you know.
I guess that is the secret of success.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I've had some successes, but I wouldn't consider myself successful, if that makes sense. You know. Yeah. But again, having a good attitude, lah, I suppose, you know. Don't be an asshole, you know. I can be a fucking asshole, you know. Like I know some people who would definitely refer to me as that fucking asshole, yeah. You know. For sure, I've got my.
I guess moments. That's what it takes to be the boss, I think, or to get shit done.
Yeah, I think so. You have to get shit done, right? Be a little bit more ruthless, lah, when it comes to certain stuff. Yeah, even Moods tells me I'm too nice, man. What the fuck, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, ah, God, it's just not my style, bro.
How would he witness that? He sees it. He
Moods, no, Moods is a great guy, but we are very different people, him and I. You know, cara kita lain, very different. Like Jake is a great guy, but again, we are all very different people, right? So I'm comfortable with who I am, and I don't want to change that. Not to say I don't want to improve. I want to improve myself, you know. And I know I'm constantly looking to improve myself where I can, but there's certain traits about me that I kind of like, you know. I like being the nice guy.
You like being yourself, I guess.
Yeah.
You like being Eddie Lim.
I like being Eddie Lim, man. I don't want to be Moods. I don't want to be Jake.
Okay, thank you so much, bro, for being part of Hello Loco Bikimono podcast. This means a lot to me, man.
Okay, I'm glad. Right.
It's a documentation, man.
I'd like to contribute, man.
All right, hopefully the listeners will benefit from this, bro. Okay. Good luck on the things you do.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks, bro.
Okay, man, that was my first podcast ever.
Hello Loco Bikimono podcast. My Loco.